Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatastadiya. Yata, because tadiya is. Pure devotees are not distinguished by externals like social class. They belong to the Lord. Here Narada explains why one should avoid caste-conscious prejudice towards devotees of Krishna. Because devotees are all of one class, they are of his own. And because they belong to the Supreme Lord, the devotees are worshipable. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param asmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarcharam. Of all types of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is best. And better than worship of Lord Vishnu is worship of his devotees. Vaishnava, Padma Purana. Tadiya means in relation to him. The devotees are intimately related to the Lord because they are under the shelter of his internal energy, thus they always accompany him and serve him as his carrier Garuda, his conch, nantashesh, his cows, his gopis, and so on. In a general sense, all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. By eternal fragments, Krishna says, that is another reason why one should not judge someone higher or lower by material standards. But although all jivas are dear to the Lord, he is near only to his devotees, and therefore they receive his special attention, as said in Bhagavad Gita. Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho sinatriya. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayite teshi chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. Whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurimutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyasya Kripashindu Bhayedacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're finishing up the section. Narada glorifies the character of those who've attained higher level of bhakti. And it's important to know their symptoms, to identify devotees and be able to appropriate deal with different types of devotees, and also to have some kind of gauge ourselves or some kind of aspiration ourselves for spiritual advancement. So devotees were described as single-minded. They'll focus on the ultimate reality and not anything else. Usayati kab budhi. Their intelligence is very, very fixed. Bahu shakayananta shan one thing, which is God, not many, many things, the varieties of fluctuations and desires that come from the false ego, constantly trying to enjoy and control this world. And devotees with that type of dedication, and it's an internal dedication, and the internal dedication is I want to serve Krishna. Anyata Sharanam, he is the only real shelter, meaning that what ultimately shelter is that which sustains your existence. The conception of yourself determines what you feel will sustain you. If you just think you're the body, it's just your occupation. If it's your, think you're the mind, then it's philosophy and poetry or whatever that is. But if you think you're the soul, what sustains you and what shelters you is the object of love, which is perfect, which means an object of love that can reciprocate properly with you in that relationship of love, an object that's eternal, an object that has substance or is real, an object that is dear to one, and an object that is powerful enough to actually reciprocate your love and give you that shelter. So, this faith, this trust, in that relationship with God. And you can see very clearly devotees who have faith. They're only engaged in this Krishna consciousness and this illusion. Really. There's things connected to reality and there's things connected to illusion. So one is connected to reality, he's surrendered to reality. In relationship with reality. It's an internal thing. The external follows the internal. The face, the external, is in index of the mind, the internal. So when you are surrendered to Krishna, Krishna's controlling everything. When you want to serve Krishna, and that's your single-minded objective. When you want that, when you want reality, which is Krishna is God and you're part of God, and you're the anga, the limb of God. You're not the angi, you're not the body of God. The part of God, you're not God. When you have that internal desire and eternal dedication, then Krishna removes his illusory potency, which had covered what you don't want to see, which is the absolute reality and yourself as his servant. So when you develop that desire to serve God fully, you develop that consciousness, then you become free from Maya, which was just God's energy following your consciousness, your desire not to surrender to him, your desire not to want God as the supreme control or the absolute control, and not to want yourself as his servant. So, when you surrender to God, meaning when you want his shelter, then God reveals himself, one experiences God, and therefore one experiences the energy of one's relationship to God, which is devotion. And one becomes a receptacle for love, for God's energy of love. And when that flows through one's consciousness, one's in ecstasy. It's a powerful experience. Because the receptacle of that energy of love, God's energy of love, is our hearts. So devotees have ecstatic symptoms. Due to that emotion, due to that love, the devotees' throats choke up, their hair stands on end. And because they have that consciousness of love and devotion, they're like a touchstone. And they purify anything in contact with them, especially the people who are their followers. We see them as representatives of God, and therefore have surrendered to their desires, which is none other than love of God, and taken those desires into their own hearts. So, this is the character of such single-minded devotees. They purify everything. They purify everything because they are completely saturated with love of Godhead. And that's what purity is. Purity means the original nature of something when nothing else is added. So what is our original nature when nothing else is added? What is our original nature when nothing else is in? As Prabhupada said, the perfectional state of living entity is called the devotee. And when one becomes a devotee, he fulfills the legacy or purpose of the succession of his ancestors, his forefathers, his line. The purpose of a line, a family tradition, a dynasty, whatever it is. The purpose is to produce good children. That's the purpose of sex life. And that's how families continue. Dharma Vrudhe Bhute Shukamos Bhisti Bharatashva. And sex life according to religious principles. And when actually a pure devotee is born in a family, the family is joyful. Why? Because it has achieved the perfection or objective of family life. Objective of family life is to produce children. And the better the children are, the more successful the family and the forefathers and the lineage is. And the highest perfection of human consciousness, the perfected state of living entity, is called the devotee. Because our awareness has manifested its full perfection, which is love of Godhead. And now the last point that was made, in such people, the social class, the education, the family background, the beauty, the wealth, makes no difference. And now this verse is actually now finally explaining why. Let me find the verses, excuse me. It's explaining why. Okay, anyways. second, I lost my name. One minute, I'm still looking. I found it. Chai. I'm kind of finding where I am. Just taking a look. Almost there. Okay. Okay, at least I can find the alleys. Sorry, it's just a little bit more. I'm kind of getting. Can they make no difference? Oh, yes, I can't find that. I'm sorry, I'm just. Okay, somehow I'm just. And I'm not going to find my notes, but okay, it doesn't matter. Okay, you get the notes. Okay, and this first explains why. In other words, why there's no when you're talking about devotees, not a question of high class people, low class people. Don't make these social distinctions. Because devotees are the class of God. Devotee is in relationship to God because they have accepted and taken shelter of God. And he quoted the verse, they're tadiya. They belong to God. And everyone, in a sense, belongs to God. Everyone is part of God. But devotee means one who is not only in relationship to God, but is acting in that relationship to God, and therefore is sheltered by God. So that's not the distinction of the devotee. and it's so simple in bhakti in that sense. That if you're in the jnana marg, your status is your renunciation and your purity in the modes, and therefore the status is a Brahmin, the status is a renunciate. But in bhakti, it's not like that. Bhakti, the consciousness is not renunciation, it's dedication. So regardless of one's material situation, a person's glory is his surrender and dedication to God. And in bhakti, even if you have attachments, you can be pure in the sense that you're offering everything to God with love and with devotion. And therefore, your identity ceases to be external. The identity becomes internal. Your identity becomes devotee. And devotee is not a material position. In fact, in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, the beginning of creation, Krishna enlightened Brahma, and he did it in four verses, because Brahma is the Adi Kavi Ayeti, he's the supreme intelligent person. And you find this in your speaking to people, is the more they understand, the less you have to say to get them to understand. It's just like when I manage sometimes, there's one person who has a vision of organization and management, and to communicate something, you only have to say a few words, they get it, and they do it. It's very, very simple. In the same way, a devotee is surrendered to God. That's his identification. He's accepted by God. He's loving God. There's a relationship with God. That's his, so in the Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Brahma spoke, I was explaining, if someone says just a few things, if someone has some frame of reference, they'll understand a lot. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is spoken in only 700 verses. Because Arjuna was so intelligent and had such a frame of reference and understanding that in 750 verses, he can understand the whole philosophy. We have to study it for months and months and months and months and months and months. Because we don't have the prerequisite faith and knowledge to fully comprehend it. So Lord Brahma has only spoken the Vedas in four verses, and the fifth verse described Prema Bhakti. And Prema Bhakti is when you have love of Godhead, you see God everywhere. Basically, because in love, you have full desire to actually embrace reality. You love reality, which is God. You love reality, which you're a servant of God. And therefore, you can fully experience reality. And what is reality? Reality is Krishna. Reality is Krishna and Krishna's energy. And that person who has that love, he can fully embrace reality. He can fully see reality. And he can fully feel reality. So Krishna explained to Lord Brahma, Prema Bhakti. One in the highest consciousness sees God everywhere. And then the fourth verse is how you attain God. And it says, you should search for this. That's what sadhana is. Sadhana means you make an objective for a goal. You can't have a practice without a goal. The first element in sadhana is, I know what prema is. I want that. That's my goal. My goal is I should have love for God. So first the goal comes first, then the practice. The third verse is describing prema. God is pervading everywhere. The fourth verse is the practice. What's the practice? One should have a desire. One should seek this. That's what bhakti means. Pradyumna gave a nice definition. Bhakti is makes oneself available. Available what? Available to service. One should search for this. So the abhideya, the practice is what? One should search for this. If you have that objective, and that objective is strong, then your practice will be strong. And practice is intimately connected to goal. You can't attain a destination unless you have a destination. So bhakti begins with our destination. We want prema. We want love of Godhead. So it says one should search for this, but where? Sarvatra sarvada. Everywhere and anywhere. And that means, that verse means, everywhere and anywhere. It means bhakti is applicable in any situation because in bhakti, the process is simple. Because there's not a material qualification like austerities, like jnana, like birth. There's not any external qualifications for it in bhakti. The process is simple. The application is difficult. Process is simple. Child can perform bhakti better than a big scholar if he has the heart for it. But the application is difficult because it deals with the heart. You have to give up envy and you have to surrender. If on the second verse of the Bhagavatam, when it explains the nature of the Bhagavatam, it says dharma kaitabo projita yamacharanam sitam. Yamacharanam sitam. It's for the devotees who are not niyamacha. They don't have hate. What is hate? Product of hate. Product of hate is envy. You're not happy with others being better than you. So this is the quality of the devotee. Niyamachara. He doesn't have hate. He doesn't have envy. He doesn't have a material objective. That's the nature of the devotee. He doesn't have a material objective. There is no material objective. There's a spiritual objective. You have to surrender to God. You have to serve God. And that's available in any condition one is in. If he just gives himself to God. And therefore there are verses that say, that is the culmination of evolution. The culmination of evolution is a status of heart, of humility, sympathy, simplicity, purity, surrender, and love. And anyone can do it. Everyone right now has the capabilities and tools to become a pure devotee. Just have to surrender to Krishna. Not material qualifications. You have materially qualifications, you're in a situation to surrender to God. Whatever your environment is, whatever your situation is, you can respond by bowing your head to God. And that's bhakti. So, this is why pure devotees are not distinguished by social class, etc., background, wealth. because they have a higher qualification, and that's a qualification of heart, that they've made themselves available for God. They have given themselves to God, and therefore God has accepted them. It's a different class, but not materially class. It's a spiritual class. And therefore, pure devotees can come in any condition and species. Let's put any human, let's stick with human status. Many times I've seen people who have fallen, so to speak, but humble. In a general sense, all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, my eternal fragments. Krishna says, and that is another reason why one should not judge someone higher or lower by material standards. But although all jivas are dear to Krishna, he is dear only to his devotees, and therefore they receive his special attention. As said in the Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Samaham Savabhuteshu Name Dvesho Sanapya Deva Janti Tamam Bhaktya Mayite Deshicha. I envy no one, nor I am partial to anyone. I am equal to all. Whoever renders service unto me, devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend in him. God is equal. You're not partial to anyone in that sense. But it's proper to God doesn't have the defect of impersonality. So he reciprocates with people. And if people give God their hearts and surrender fully to God, God reciprocates with a type of affection or mercy or care. That's bhakti. Tesham Satyatanam Bhajatam Kritipurvakam Vidami Buddhyam. The one who worships me with faith and love, I give him the knowledge by which he can come back to me. That's not a defect in God. That is the opulence of God. The opulence of God is that he reciprocates in relationship. Therefore, what does reciprocation relationship mean is that you take another person's desire as your own because you want to fulfill it. What they want, I will do. So the opulence of God is that he's controlled by love. An exalted person is not callous to the love of others and is inspired to reciprocate. So this is why you don't distinguish a devotee by externals. Distinguish a devotee by the mercy he has received. In reciprocation to his unalloyed service to God. And the mercy of God is God gives himself to the devotees in love. How wonderful that is. How wonderful the conception of divinity, that divinity reciprocates with love. Therefore, here to be. The devotees are not distinguished in these ways because they belong to the Lord. Why? Because they gave themselves to the Lord. This is what happens at Bhava Bhakti. This is what happens at the highest stage of love. The highest stage of love is your happiness becomes the happiness of your beloved. It's So you become subjugated by the desires of God, by the desires of your beloved. And to such a devotee, God gives himself. Because he doesn't have the effective impersonality. During a conversation with Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya once elaborately explained the same truth explained in this sutra. Out of humility, he considered his body useless for devotional service, and he decided to commit suicide under the wheel of Lord Jagannath's chariot. But Lord Chaitanya read his mind and forbade him to do so, telling that he already surrendered his body to the service, to the Lord for service. He has given himself. He belongs. That's what love is. From this day, I am yours. Isn't that his love? I am yours for your needs, not some whims. You're worthy. So Sanatana Goswami is about to commit suicide because he was so humble at all these sores. And Lord Chaitanya was embracing him, and he felt so bad. He felt so useless for devotional service. He's thinking, I'll give up my life. And Lord Chaitanya refused. In fact, he embraced him. Even though his body was just bruising, sores. So when he used to embrace, when Lord Chaitanya used to embrace Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami was mortified. So Sanatana Goswami decided to leave Jagannath Puri. But Lord explained that he's not offended by Sanatana's body. Rather, he felt great bliss by embracing Sanatana because he saw his body as transcendental. What is transcendental? Transcendental is service and surrender. That's a spiritual platform. That's above the modes of nature. The modes of nature are sent only to facilitate our desires to enjoy separate from God. If you don't have those desires, God does not cover you with the modes, which are meant to cover you, to fulfill your desire not to see God and to be separate from it to your own enjoyment. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then quoted Bhagavad Gita. The divinity of Sampane, Brahmani, Kavi, Hashtani, Shrini, Chaiva, Subhaki, Pandita, Samadarshana. A humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned, gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. What's the equal vision? That they're the same. They're just misidentifying the different things. Can have different levels of ego. But who they are is the same. And he sees that. He sees they're all souls. They have different conceptions and different types of bondage. My dear Haridas, I think you are as my little boys to be maintained by me. My dear Haridas, Lord Chaitanya is saying, the maintainer never takes seriously any faults of the maintained. When a child passes stool and urine that touches the body of the mother never hates the child. On the contrary, she takes much pleasure in cleaning him. The stool and urine of the child appear like sandalwood pulp for the mother. Similarly, when the foul moisture oozing from the sores of Sanatan touch my body, I have no hatred for him. Because he's seeing the spirit, and the spirit of the spirit to remain connected with God. Lord Chaitanya then further explained the glories of devotional service and how it transforms a devotee's body into spiritual existence. We are transformed. Our essence has been perverted due to certain conditions. And due to other conditions, our spiritual identity will be revealed. Conclusion, the body of a pure devotee is never material. Even if it appears so, Krishna still accepts the devotee as dear and embraces him as his own. With the Lord's mercy, the devotee is spiritualized. In his transcendental body, he renders service to the Lord's lotus feet. Anyway, I can stop for little questions. But before that, we had a wonderful function yesterday at the Bhakti Center. It's just so nice. You look at the website of the Bhakti Center. You look at the website of the Bhakti Center, and it's really nice how it's reaching out and expressing the depth and beauty of Krishna consciousness in so many ways. So we commemorate it September 11th, which is really a heartfelt event for people in New York. I didn't realize how much till we did the event, and it was so nice that the Bhakti Immersion Retreat, this super nice Italian man who was a fireman at 9/11 came to the retreat. So I invited him to come to the remembering September 11th. It was so beautiful at the beginning that Lakshmi just explained that in devotional service, one of our principles is duty before self in the appropriate way, and also that we're grateful. And we're grateful for people who sacrifice for others. And therefore, on behalf of the Bhakti Center, we wanted to honor those people. And he gave a garland to this very nice person who's also a yoga teacher now. After his retirement, he became a yoga teacher. And then I spoke of the September 11th. We're going to post that on my Facebook page, the lecture, but by Krishna's grace, it was very much appreciated. And I just discussed, and a lot of the questions that arose, and I think one thing is, I took lunch with this fireman the day before at the Revolves because he lives near there. It was just coincidence. Nothing to do with the September 11th. I would have met him anyway. But when I spoke to him, he explained to me what it was like to be there. And when he saw those buildings coming down, knowing that some of his dear friends were being crushed to death, he was just reflecting why he was alive. And reflecting what he was alive, he figured, if I'm alive, if God has kept me alive and has not taken me, then my life should have some purpose, and I should fulfill the purpose of that life. So I was describing how really calamity, in so many ways, can force us to see things in a deeper way. We become satisfied with a certain level in a compromised position. we're in trouble because we're going to die. We're going to suffer disease. We suffer old age. We are facing calamities. On the material platform, this world is a calamity. But we somehow settled into it because it's not intense enough immediately. So somehow God moves things against our will and control in a way, in a sense that we lose control of everything. Calamity. So many things change. We feel we're losing control. And therefore we don't try to find our happiness within control. We don't try to find our happiness trying to control things that is beyond our control. We try to find our happiness by controlling things that are within our control. And what's within our control is not our destiny, but how we respond to our destiny. And therefore, when destiny becomes beyond our control, beyond our desires, it is beyond our control, but also moves beyond our desires, an intelligent person shifts the endeavor for his happiness from his destiny, from seeing it as his destiny to finding it in free will. Anyway, another point that I made that I really thought about, I think it was appreciative, is that after, and I also read from my book which discusses these things, that after 9/11, it was an incredible sense of community in New York. And I just thought, what is community? Community is when people share an ideal that enables them to transcend their selfish ideals of centering themselves on their own ego. And once there's some kind of transcendent ideal or worthy ideal that unites people, it takes away from the people who are able to transcend the position of ego, which is a blockage for love. And they swim in that atmosphere. Once you're in any type of community, especially a God-conscious community, you have a spiritual ideal. Then you can relate to others. You can't relate to others from the platform of ego. Well, if you can only, from the platform of ego, you only relate to people in one sense, in a selfish way to a certain extent. To allow the sense of community was so beautiful there. I'm going to end now. Anybody like to ask a question or we say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah.
My question is, how does God or Krishna want us to respond when we are in an intensely calamitous situation and he knows that we are, you know, we're very conditioned. I'm talking about a soul that's very conditioned to depending on the externals, whether it's the body or the environment, the bank account, the looks, whatever. Deeply, deeply attached to, you know, the material. I mean, let's say they're aspiring devotees, but But, you know, really, you know, I mean, it just seems so impossible to you say, in this moment, we can become surrendered. You know, we can have we can control our internal response. But that, I don't know, somehow that seems so impossible to say we can control our internal response and decide, even in the midst of that calamitous situation, when we are conditioned and have been for lifetimes, to say that we can suddenly say, okay, I don't care about my, you know, my externals anymore, whatever you want, Krishna, you know, to suddenly become Queen Kunti or something, you know, to go to that from being conditioned.
I need to answer, or you have to make your question shorter?
Yeah, well, that's my question. How to go from suddenly being conditioned to Queen Kunti?
You can't control your destiny, right? That's for sure. Destiny is beyond your control. And you have different abilities to respond. I guess it does affect according to the modes that you're in, et cetera. And, you know, you're trying to analyze God's plan. In other words, he moves things in different ways. He gives people, you know, why is he giving someone an experience that he fails, right? When he knows they'll fail. Right? Anyway, what's failure? There's an experience anyway. There may be endeavor, there may be effort, but there may be still failure. It's not failure. Just like you may fail a test, but in one sense you may not fail, but you may have learned something. You know, and the world is meant to help us learn something. And we cannot say what is the best way for that to be done. Because we have no access to the complexities of our activities and our past life, and our past lives, and the reactions that are necessary to give us the fuller understanding. We can't say that. We can't say that I know that this is best or that's not best. How can we say what's best? How can we make that judgment? We can't make that judgment. Because we don't have the information to make that judgment, to say that this is, you know, this was impossible. It may be impossible. This wasn't good. You have the person with this and the person with that, and he was suffering so much, and you know, he has a conditioning, and he's going to fail, et cetera. We don't know what the contribution of that activity was to the elevation of that person's consciousness. And because God gave us free will, someone can fail. But if someone fails, that also doesn't mean that God gave the wrong choice. Right? God gave a chance. You know, God gave people a chance. So I don't want to be in a horrible suffering condition, and there are people that are. And we discussed this yesterday, the question of theodicy. And, you know, to reconcile the suffering in the world, evil in the world, with the existence of God. And I gave two answers, that God's perfection is choice, and choice is misused, and misused choice gets a reaction to rectify the consciousness that misused that choice. And the other one is that there's a certain experience that comes with the things that happen to us, which we are not free from responsibility for. And we can't make judgment. The most horrible thing, the person may just be the end of his karma. And when he burns that off and experiences whatever there was, the sense of lack of control, the sense of the humility, whatever, you know, may make that person, he may be free. So I really don't think we can make that judgment. Why is God doing this? You know, and the person. Because it's beneficial. It's beneficial whether the person perfects it. It's beneficial that it's happened to the person, and it was intended for his benefit, even if the person completely fails. You can't say it was a better thing for God to do that for that person. Yeah, that may have been the best for that person.
My question was actually a little different. I was referring to your statement that we can decide right now to, you know, surrender, like we're a pure devotee or something. And I just didn't understand how that's so possible for a conditioned soul in a very calamitous situation.
This is a situation, the person has free will. So it's possible to surrender if a person has free will. It may be difficult, it may be covered, but the person has free will. To the extent that he embraces lower modes, he compromises his free will. But if it's free will, it's possible.
And surrender looks like this.
What's that?
Surrender means in the calamitous situation, I just accept.
I've seen it with people who are dying. I told you that yesterday. I've seen it with people who are dying. That's the most calamitous situation. It's just at a particular point, going through the experience, they realize I can't control things. I'm happy with God's will. I'm happy with God's will. I've seen it in calamity. Does it happen to everyone? No. But I've seen it. The worst calamitous situations. There's a book called by Viktor Frankl, who was in the concentration camps. And he wrote this book, A Search for Meaning. And even in that circumstance, he found meaning. He found meaning in life. So if your point is it difficult for people in certain circumstances? Of course it is. They're heavily conditioned. Can they surrender? Yes, if they meet a pure devotee, if they become inspired, if they get a little more knowledge. And even in the worst condition, that may be their entrance. If they embrace humility.
And they mean it. When they say, I accept it, they mean it, even though...
It's not easy. I didn't say it's easy. I said it's possible. I said it's within their realm of possibilities, in contrast to destiny.
Okay,
we can discuss more some other time. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Gauran Bhaktadas.
Hello, Govardhan. Okay, I'm going to end for now. Bunch of culpa through this separate decision.